Hello out there, and welcome to No Stupid Answers, where a doctor of philosophy, a recovering archaeologist, a professional engineer, and a corporate millennial answer Reddit's best questions. I'm Colton Wallace with a full crew today. Joining me is Jessica Yazarians.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
Lori Asava.
Hey, hey.
And Josh Lieto.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Josh.
What's up?
So, Josh, I got a question for you.
Hit me with it.
This one comes from Reddit user anxious_ad_1238. And the question is, why do neighbors ignore each other and avoid building relationships? My neighbors all wave and say hello, but there is no feeling of camaraderie, very different from when I was growing up. And I guess I'm curious, do you guys know your neighbors?
Yeah, I know my neighbors.
And do you, are these apartment neighbors or house neighbors?
The house next to us lives within the people with the house, and they don't have a, very, friendly attitude towards us, even though despite my many tries, I have attempted to befriend them. So
what have you tried, Josh?
I've tried saying hello, how are you, talking about the weather, sports, talking about, you know, I once lent my neighbor a brush for his grill in order to clean his grill. And he was...
Wait, hold on. You actually lent your brush a neighbor to clean the
yes,
grill?
Yes.
Wait, do you have a grill?
Yeah, I have a Weber 16-inch black crab shell round grill.
So do you like talk, but outside of that, do you talk to them? Like, did you know them before, or did they just show up and they're like, hey, can we borrow your grill cleaner?
Well, they had moved in. And so just as a result of them living in the place that shares a wall with our place, we happen to see them every now and again. And then I actually heard the guy one time talking about how he was actually cleaning the grill. He had left it out all winter. And it just got totally fucked. And I heard him like yelling to the girl inside and being like, we don't have a brush. Like, I lost my brush. I have no idea where my brush is. And so I actually attempted to befriend him by walking over there and saying, hey, man, you need a brush? And he said, oh, yeah, I would really appreciate that. And so I went around to my front yard. We have a little white picket fence, and it walked around, and I have a little purple bin that I got from Costco, and I keep all of my grill supplies, such as charcoal and, you know, grill brushes and these sorts of implements. And I picked it out of that plastic bin. I took it back to him, and he said, hey, man, thanks. How can I give this back to you? And I said, well, if you just go around to the front yard, there is a purple plastic bin. And you can just go ahead and put the brush back in that bin when you're done with it. And I haven't checked if he's put the brush back in there yet, or if he actually did at all. But anyways, I haven't heard from him since then.
Okay, well, that was a very long explanation about...
So I guess my answer is I don't know why people... I want to be friends with neighbors. I don't know why people are kind of prickly and like won't really contact you even after you've lent them your brush.
Okay. Well, I mean, but so I guess I don't know that I'm super good friends with my neighbors now. Like we own a house and it's in like a relatively compact neighborhood. Like there's houses on each side within like 20 feet. And it kind of just goes that way down the whole block. So there's like a lot of people around, but I wouldn't say I know any of our neighbors very well. And like, I do kind of see what this guy's saying to where like, I say hi to my neighbors, but that's it. Like, it's like, they don't want to engage with me and I don't even know how I would start to engage with them. And I guess if I think back to like college, like I remember in the dorms, like I knew all my neighbors and it was like, I met so many people that way, but it's like now with, you know, where I live now in a house in a neighborhood, it's like, I don't know anyone. and I don't feel like they want to talk to me. And maybe they're just busy. I guess sometimes when I'm like walking and I'm like walking my dog and I'm out there, it's like I kind of hope people don't talk to me because I don't want to stop. So I guess I kind of understand that a little bit.
I have an old boss who had a theory about this. He focuses on networks and just, he said that if you move into a house, the first 2 weeks you need to go and knock on the doors of your neighbors and introduce yourself and say, hi, I'm new to the neighborhood. And just introduce yourself, say hi, whatever. And then within a certain amount of time, you need to go and ask for like a cup of sugar or an egg or something like that, or bring them a gift, and shows that you are both willing to give and take and be able to create kind of a community that way. And if you do that, then you start creating those networks that allow for community to build, which I don't think we do that a lot anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that seems like a really smart idea. Have you ever done that anywhere you've moved?
I have not. I am pretty cordial with my neighbors, but I'm not really, I don't really like stop and like learn a lot about them. We'll wave, we'll be nice, but I have not done that. But that's what his advice is. Anytime you move into a neighborhood, that's what you need to do. And he says that he has done it multiple times and that has created such long-lasting neighborhood friendships. I also think it's interesting because I'm a pretty transient person. We live in our apartment. We've only been there for 2 years. That's not where we're going to live forever. So I'm not sure if I always end up wanting to like really double down in those relationships when I know I'm going to be leaving again anyway.
I think for me, so like Colton and I, you know, live in the same house together. But for me, I feel like I know the neighbors a little bit better. Like I'll have conversations outside, like in the springtime when I'm like watering flowers. Like I've, you know, like sat and talked with my neighbor for like, I don't know, 45 minutes just about random stuff. And like they've actually come over and like brought us like cookies and such like around the holidays. So maybe they are trying, but maybe we're not trying super hard. But I also think it might just be easier for women to do that in some circumstances, because like I've never had like a deep conversation with I guess my neighbor friend's husband, but like the wife, like me and her like wave at each other and like we'll have long conversations just like randomly about stuff. So like I think maybe there's like this element like that it's easier for, you know, like women to connect that way, like more casually. But I don't know. I know the neighbors on the other side of us like didn't want to talk to us at all. So I think it's just like some people just want to mind their business and like other people like just maybe are a little bit warmer. But I think that generally people today, like it's just like more difficult to get to know each other and people are less like willing to be openly cordial in a lot of circumstances. So I think that might have something to do with it. But I also think it might be like a gender thing.
Well, something I'm thinking about now is like, I don't want to like offend my neighbors. So I'm like nice to them and I don't mind talking to them. But at some point I'm like kind of afraid to like, because if you offend them, then you just have to live next to them for who knows how long. Like we've, you know, so
true.
I guess that's kind of one thing is like, I don't know much about them. And it's like, if I offend them, then I have to live next to this person that they think I'm terrible at that point. And then I just have to continue living next to them and drive by their house every day. You know, we're standing outside and we just stare at each other and don't wave.
High risk.
No, like,
they always
there's
wave.
High risk.
No, I'm saying if you offend them. No, our neighbors are all like very
I
nice.
I think they're pretty chill.
Yeah, no, and I've talked to them, but it's just like, I agree. Like, I don't really know them any deeper than that.
We're also different ages. So like in a neighborhood like ours, like we're probably younger than like most of our neighbors that have families and everything. And like, we're just like in different like life stages. So like, we're not going to like hang out, I guess, as like friends per se. So maybe there's like, you know, like a generational barrier in that way either. And then like Colton, what you were saying, like you knew all your neighbors in college. Well, you're all like college students. Yeah, you're right. So, like, you're all trying you're to like, right. you know.
And that's typical, like, to know all your people in college who live next to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I it also, so. Like, some people you click with and some people you don't. Like, Josh and I do live together, and although he didn't necessarily click with the person next to us, right next to our apartment, the people across the street, he chats with them, and they have a dog. He keeps up with them. He's outside a lot more than me. I tend to be inside working most of the day, and so I don't really get to get out and about when people are kind of out and about as well. And so some people you just like have conversations with and are more willing to kind of lean in. Like, I think Jessica, you had mentioned that. And like others just like are like, this is my house. I want to be by myself. Like, I want to do the things that I want to do. And I don't really feel like this is the connection we need to have right now.
Also, what if your neighbors are just like weird? Like, I'm not trying to be like best friends with like the weird people. And like, but like, I mean, that sounds a little mean.
I think that's part of the fear, though, is you don't know if they're weird. And then if they are and you've like made a connection with them, like, what do you do? Because you're right there all the time.
Yeah. Like, what if you get like bad vibes, you know?
Yeah. Serial killers.
Terrible.
Yeah. Do you think that talking to strangers is like a less common thing than it was 30 years ago? And do you think that plays into it? Like, you just keep to yourself and there's more connectivity outside of like real world talking to people. So you have less need to talk to your neighbors because there's so much more connectivity in the world outside of
that. I think it depends on what culture you're in, to be honest. Like in the US, we are very individualistic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's getting stronger and stronger as time goes on. Whereas in other countries, it's not as individualistic. It's much more community based. And I think if you add in just what happened over the last 2 years, the pandemic, I think that's made people more high alert of like interacting with people than we have ever felt before. And I think that individualism plus an element of fear that comes in with interacting with people you don't know, plus being socially isolated for so long, I think all of those things are going to lead us to a whole different way of interaction.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I agree with that point, but I do not agree that like it's just I think that like what is considered appropriate information to share and like what an interaction looks like with a stranger is gonna that does vary like greatly around the world. And I think that I just think that at the base of it, a lot of people are it's an investment to like really get to know somebody, you know, and like we're all, and so it's like, you really have to enter with like very low stakes and just like, that's why like, you know, trying to like, I try to talk to people about like the weather and like pets and like, you know, these like very generic topics. And after you've had so many interactions, like Lori's saying, like with this guy who lives across the street, like, yeah, it turns out that our neighbors, I think, are just like, they're just like these people that are, I think, just kind of nervous too. Like, they don't really know what the best way to like approach us is and probably don't really, and don't want to. But I think that, you know, like just making a connection, like I just commented on that guy's dog one day. And like, that was just like enough to, we just like, you know, we basically see each other every day. Well, because like he sits on his porch and I go outside, and like, and it's just like, you know, after so many interactions, like I still really don't know that guy, but like we're acquaintances. And I really feel like it is very true that like the technologies that we have now do make it a lot less necessary to have those kinds of interactions, right? Like, imagine just having to like go out in the street and like find somebody to get you a ride to somewhere, you know? Versus right. like, yeah.
And what,
go for it.
Well, what you said about like the time investment, like I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I feel like that. I'm like, well, it's like, I don't want to dedicate the time to it. It's like, I don't have it. It's like, I don't have time to like meet this new person, my neighbor. And then kind of, I 100% get that like overload. And I'm like, oh, this is too hard. I got too much stuff to do, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
I definitely see that. And I think it's a valid thing. Like, you don't have the time and you're just like, shit, I got too much stuff to do. I don't have time to deal with this.
On the other hand, there's people in our neighborhood. So me and Colton take walks with our dog, like, frequently around the neighborhood. And there's this, like, one house that has, like, weird sculptures in their yard. And I just, like, think it's really cool. Like, they have this one sculpture. It's, like, bronze legs, like, sticking from, like, the waist up, like, life-size legs, like, just sticking into the air, like, and, like, the waist part and, like, below is, like, below the ground. And it's just legs sticking in the up in the air. And then they've painted them, like, weird colors. Like, now I think they're rainbows, but in the past they've been, like, collegiate colors. Anyways, every time I walk by that house, I'm like, I want to know these people. They look pretty cool.
Yeah, Jessica,
like,
wants to be their friends.
Hey, I want to be their best friends.
People at the cool house, if you're listening to the podcast, please reach out.
Yeah.
No stupid answers podcast at gmail.com.
Yeah, come borrow some sugar.
Yes, Colton. Lend Stanley a cup of sugar.
Stanley.
Anyways, and they have dogs. They just seem like pretty cool people. I'm just like, you know, like, we say hi to them too, but like, I don't know their names. And I don't know. It'd be kind of weird if and maybe that's the thing. Like, I think it'd be weird if I like went up to them and I'm like, hey, we like live in the neighborhood, let's be friends because you're, you know, like, your legs are cool.
Sounds like,
like, who says that? I mean, I would say that, but it might be off-putting.
Sounds like an experiment.
Okay, let's try it.
Maybe. I'll think about it. Anyways, thank you, Anxious Ad 1238, for the question. Our next question comes in from Virtual Welder 4525. Question, is it rude to ask for how much you earn if you work in the same field? So I've been told that you can not discuss it. However, I think it's important to be transparent and mature about it when working somewhere where the wages are unreasonable. So their question is, is it rude to ask somebody how much they make for people that work in the same field as them? And I think this is a really interesting question because I feel like there's changing attitudes towards, you know, salary discussion among employees. And I guess I'm curious what you guys think about
that. I'm going to jump in because I have strong opinions about this. So I have worked in industries where, like, in certain retail environments where we were like forbidden to talk about like our hourly rates, and you could get disciplined if you were caught like discussing your wages. And this is like specifically meant to keep people from knowing that somebody else makes more than them. And really, like, the only reason to do that is to pay people less, in my personal opinion. And so I have strong opinions about that. And I think it's like absolute trash. And, you know, I think it's a bit taboo for people to just be super open about their salaries in general. And I agree with Colton, like, the attitude is changing. But like, for me personally, I think that like people should talk about this and not be shy about it at all. It seems like a very personal thing. But like, I think it, the more you know about what other people make and like what type of benefits and what type of culture they work in, like, knowing those things can empower you to either ask for more money, expect more pay, or like think about all the other benefits like that you could be asking for. And it just like seems like a worker-centric benefit in the end. Like, it's always going to benefit the employee to talk about it versus like the employer. And so I think that a lot of attitudes that like kind of trickle down from like employers of like not wanting their employees to talk about this type of thing is just really to like keep people from making more money, and like the most simplified way I can state that. And it's just like, I'm not about that. It's like, really, it makes me angry. So I think everybody should talk about their salaries unabashedly. So I'm on like one extreme end of the spectrum. And I'm also not afraid to be like, hey, I make this much money. Like, it does not bother me at all. But I don't think everybody is comfortable with that. But I think it's to their detriment, my personal opinion, to be squeamish about that. And so I hope that like as people like get more used to this and more comfortable with people talking about it, that like this hesitation just like completely evaporates, because I think everybody will be better off for it. And I think that there's actually a country now, I don't remember what country it is? Is it
it was the UK, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're trying to like make a rule where everybody's salaries are public information. And there's some places in the US where that's like already a thing. Like, yeah, I think in academia, like I can look up like my PIs, like salaries and everything. But and anyways, so
I think that's a public universities.
Yeah.
It's like public universities and public positions.
Yeah.
So like if you work for a municipality or like
tax
a road
dollars
commission, then yeah, then those are public salaries.
I think that like move is like is the right way to go. Like I think that eliminates pay disparities between different groups of people and like really like empowers, you know, like working people to demand more fair wages and treatment.
I've fully
anyways, that's my personal opinion.
I think that there's two things at play here. Power. And that is keeping things quiet gives power to the employer, not the employee. And so there's benefits for them to keep you hush hush about things, to keep them quiet. And the second thing is equity. We will never reach a equitable world if we stay quiet about these things. And I can tell you, like, from my own personal opinion and from my own personal experiences, I have been paid well under people that are less qualified than me. I would have never known unless I had a boss that called it out. And I think that there are so many pay disparities that are not being talked about because the power is in the hand of the employer rather than the employee. And I think that women do not negotiate significantly as much as others. Same with people in minority classes. Like, there's just so many things that we should be talking about, and we should be supporting other people to have those conversations because those are also things that were never taught. Like, I have conversations all the times with my friends about how to negotiate their pay, how to have conversations about benefits, how to have conversations when they're making those job choices. And those are things that were never taught. And so it's not a skill that we practiced often, and it's not a skill that we're taught often. And so I think that the only way we'll get to an equitable world is if we all are doing it together. And that starts with transparency.
100% agree.
Yeah, I think that it can be rude to ask how much somebody is making at the end of the day. I think that it's just going to depend on like the context of the relationship, and like that's very complex in terms of like employers and employees, and so
yeah, I guess I could see situations like if you're not in like a similar position to the other person, I could see that coming off as super awkward, I guess. As an example, like, so in all the places I've worked, there's always been an underground like discussion by the employees of salary. And every place I've worked, we have always all discussed our salaries. And part of that was there was a very friendly culture between me and my coworkers in those places. And I tried very hard to support that idea. Like, I was very good friends with all my coworkers at all my previous employers. And we always ended up like over time becoming friends and then starting to discuss salaries eventually. And it was beneficial to all of us.
I do think, though,
I see what you're saying.
I think we need to switch it from putting it on the onus of the person and the individual to pushing it back, like, to the company for forcing equitable pay, and so that they should be able to share transparent information where we don't have to. It's automatically shared. Because right now, if somebody can negotiate, and if they're way better at negotiating than you, and even though that job has nothing to do with negotiation, they'll get paid more. And that's because they have no checks and balances sometimes around pay. They don't really always say, for sure, like, you're in this job, you should get paid X with this amount of like experience, blah, blah, blah. It's not like a, like 1 + 1 = 2. It's not an algorithm always, or it's more about persuasion at this point. I mean, specifically in the US, based on my experience, but like we should be pushing that back on the institutions to be forcing and challenging their own ways of doing things. And right now, it feels so weird because it's all about us as individuals having to do that. Mm-hmm. It should be on the companies to do that.
Well, and also, like, when you're interviewing for jobs, like, the process is so obscuring. Like, it's like a taboo topic even during job interviews a lot of times, it feels like. And especially for, like, younger employees, like, it's like they really, I feel like, it's kind of screwed over in that situation.
Yeah, there's also some states that are doing things. Like, in California, they have to, if you ask for a salary range when you are interviewing, they have to give you that information. And I don't know exactly the right law and like how it works, but there are things being passed that are forcing those conversations. I just think it's really slow. And I think that we, like, companies are focusing on like social responsibility and like trying to make better companies and cultures and things like that. A lot of that stuff should come down to pay. Like, that's why we have jobs, and we try to sugarcoat it with a lot with other things. Other benefits, other shiny objects. If we were to be much more transparent about some of these things, like benefits and pay, I think that would be a much better kind of entry point into having open conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an amazing answer, Lori. Josh, did you have any?
I think I am good.
All righty then. Well, thank you, Virtual Welder 4525. Our next question comes in from Oscar Rosales. How do you microwave leftover fries without them coming out soggy and flavorless? And I looked over this one on Reddit. And Reddit generally agrees microwaving is not the way for leftover French fries. But my question is, what leftovers are okay to microwave? For me personally, most things I want to put in the oven. But, I mean, do you guys oven your leftovers, or are you microwaving them?
I am way too lazy to oven my stuff. So, and Josh knows very well, I am not really the best leftover person. There is something about taking it from the fridge and warming it up and then eating it. I don't mind eating the leftovers. It's the act of warming up the leftovers that I just can't seem to get over. So when I'm eating leftovers, I force Josh to warm them up for me.
I can't see it before it's warm.
Just because there's just something, you know, the when you open up the Tupperware lid and there's like condensation on the top of the lid or something like that. It just
Is
lick weird. It. I don't know. And I don't feel like I
you
was
ever,
always
like
this.
Ever, like,
just more like as I get older, I was just like, no, I don't want to deal with that. I will eat things cold, though. Cold pizza, yes. Sign
That's
me up.
I,
like, there are things that I will definitely eat leftovers without heating up as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next, actually, Lori. I was going to ask if you eat things cold, because I definitely do. And Colton's always like, shouldn't you heat that up? And I'm like, nah, it's totally fine. I'll, like, eat it all cold, whatever. Sometimes you just have to.
You need an oven.
Some people won't use microwaves at all. Like, some people believe that, like, microwaves are unhealthy. Like, I don't know, like, exactly what the belief is. But some people refuse to use microwaves at all and only will heat things up on the stove or in the oven. So there's that. But yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying microwave anything, but it's super convenient for some things. I'm a fan of microwaves.
Great job, microwaves. A plus.
Josh, you use the microwave quite a bit.
Can't live without my Hot Pockets.
Oh, you're microwaving your Hot Pockets?
I mean, isn't that the only way to... Wait.
No, you oven
wait,
your Hot
are you
Pockets.
Supposed to oven them? I haven't eaten a Hot Pocket since
Hot
I was 12.
Okay,
so
Hot Pockets
I don't,
come with those
that's
little,
a lie.
Like... They have those cases you put them in when we heat them up, and it has something to do with, like, it increases the heat towards the center, but it never works.
It's an engineering marvel.
An engineering failure. Josh, are you really eating Hot Pockets from the microwave?
I can't.
Oh my gosh. That's.
You can't confirm or deny. Is that what you're trying to say?
It's just like, yeah, you know. Yeah.
All right, I think The clear verdict for Oscar Rosales here is that you should oven it, Oscar.
Unless, that's
what I just that. Well, no, I'm going to argue with this fries. Because I am way too lazy to let the oven preheat. Then you put something in.
Oh, don't.
It's like, why don't I just cook a new meal? Screw leftovers. Like, just make something new.
No. You don't have to wait for it to preheat when you're heating stuff up. Just put it in at the beginning.
Yeah. No.
Like, it's your pizza will be heated up by the time the oven preheats.
No.
Oh my
God. I just know. Well, you will never find me preheating and doing all the things that you're doing.
Right,
and
so
also, you're not going to catch Lauren.
Also,
using
you
oven.
Put leftovers in like plastic containers a lot of times. You can't just throw that into an oven. You have more dishes if you have to do that.
No,
oven.
You put them in a Pyrex and then you can
really
oven it.
Really good point. We have something called dish economy. So like, you know, like
that
if
was
you
private.
So if you like start to use too many dishes, like an extra like forks and knives and like things when you're like either preparing a meal or like heating something up, I'll like be like, whoa, put that dish away. Like, poor dish economy. You gotta like make sure you're like not like making that. Too much of a mess. So I'm with Lori on this.
All right, Oscar. So use an oven, or if you're lazy, use a microwave.
Everybody's lazy, Colton. Ouch. Welcome to humanity. Well,
not all of
lazy.
Us have time.
Some of us like oven food because it's better.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we all agree.
You know, I have a friend who heats up pizza in their cast iron. Have you ever heard of this?
Oh, good.
Yeah, I made a pizza in a cast iron before.
No, not make it. Like, you have a slice of pizza in the fridge.
Yeah.
You put it in the cast iron, and instead of heating it in a microwave or a stove, you're doing it in a oven. You're heating it on the stove.
That's probably too hard for you, though, right?
Ouch.
She needs a pizza right away. She doesn't have time.
I don't have time. I eat it cold.
One of life's like most wondrous things is eating cold pizza.
Hey, you know where you can get a pizza now? That's a Little Caesars hot and ready. You can get it right now.
Hot and ready.
This is a commercial for Little Caesars.
No.
Product placement.
I know. Well, I want to say
now from our sponsor,
Little Caesars.
Please no.
All the pizza you want right now. Oh. Is that their slogan?
I have no idea.
Pizza. That's
pizza. Pizza.
All right. Well, there you go, Oscar. All right. Our next question comes in from Scholar of the Arts. And the question is, what are shower demons? I've heard people reference something called shower demons. Now, I've never heard of that, but this person has. Now, when I take a shower while I'm washing my hair, I close my eyes so as not to get the shampoo in my eyes, as I'm fairly certain it's normal practice. While I have my eyes closed to protect me from stingy substance, sometimes various frightening images will appear in my mind's eye, clear as day in the inky void behind my eyelids. Is this what shower demons are? ? And if so, do you guys get them when you take showers as well? Then there was a later on edit. Just so everyone's aware, I don't literally think I'm seeing actual demons. I realize it's probably just my active imagination or something. I just want to see if this is what people mean by the term shower demons and if anyone else has similar experiences. So my first question is, have you guys ever heard of shower demons?
Never.
Never.
Okay.
Never, ever. Not ever. Not once, ever.
I haven't heard of shower demons, but I also, okay, so I know what the user is talking about when they're saying, you know, like they close their eyes and like see images popping up from the void, right? Like, I guess if you're like close to sleep or in a dark room, you know, like shadows can kind of like take on different forms. You can do that when you're looking at clouds and other things, right? There's other instances where your brain is like creating images out of random patterns. So I wonder if that's like the process that they're talking about as well. I don't know what a shower demon is, but I've for sure had similar experiences where I think that like just my brain is making, you know, trying to form images out of nothing. And also there's like a phenomenon where that can happen with sound. So if there's ambient sound in a room, some people can actually have like auditory hallucinations in a sense where they're like thinking that they hear a musical tone or like a song, when there's really just like ambient noise and it's your brain just trying to like make sense of this kind of like amorphous sound. That's just a fun fact that I thought was interesting.
I got a sidebar here. So speaking of sounds you hear and your brain making up sounds. So when I was younger, I played like a lot of Pokemon when it first came out, Pokemon Red and Blue. And there's like the battle music to Pokemon Red and Blue. Mm-hmm. And I remember like sitting in the shower or standing in the shower and I could hear the Pokemon battle music playing. Is that the same idea?
I don't know.
Because it's just like it was like burned into my head because I was playing so much Pokemon. I was addicted. I was just an addicted 10-year-old, 7-year-old. Not important. But is that kind of the same idea? Like where your brain makes sounds or is it? Is
I think different? It's like filling in the gaps.
I gotcha. So I guess shower demons to me is like when you close your eyes and then like in the horror movie trailer, you're closing your eyes, washing your hair, and then there's just a demon arm coming out of the wall reaching for you. To me, that's a shower demon. And like when I'm washing my hair, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm like, is there a demon coming out of the wall? Or in the case where there was an actual demon of my cat trying to attack me while I was in the shower.
True. Yeah.
What would you do if you if there was actually a demon coming out of the wall? What would you actually do?
I don't know.
Well, that's easy. You just make a salt circle
in the shower.
You have salt in your shower.
That's good. You keep some salt in your shower.
Be prepared.
That's true.
I mean, you can make a really good salt scrub out of just like regular salt. You don't have to buy it.
You know,
it,
if you really aren't feeling salt, you can also get some good old fashioned exercised holy water.
There you go.
That's what works for me. And the other thing is I can basically bathe in it. I can drink it. And I'm kind of a pure individual as a result.
True.
I mean, I don't know what I would do. Like, I want to say, I feel like I'd be stunned for a brief second. Then would I punch the demon? Like, maybe? That's what I want.
What if the demon doesn't have a physical form? You couldn't punch it.
Well, do I punch through it? Because I see it? Do I see the demon?
I would assume you're seeing it if it's, I mean.
All right. So I punch the demon.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you can punch it. You can see things, right?
I roll a d20 and I get 20.
I just want to know what Scholar of Arts, is referencing with shower demons. I just have never heard.
Oh,
this
yeah.
Is like
she, they're, I'm sorry. I don't know if it's true. Referencing shower. Yeah, I've never heard anyone reference shower demons.
I haven't either.
Somebody.
I just wonder if, like, you know, showers are one place where you're, like, alone with very little distractions. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's, like, inner demons coming out. Like, I wonder if there's a moment of, like, I don't know. You close your eyes. You're, like, not really thinking. You're kind of. I don't know. Some feelings are coming out. I've never heard of this. I tend to be like much more happy in the shower. I think I love a good shower.
Yeah.
So I like singing songs or thinking about what I'm going to do for the day or something. So I have not had this experience of having my own shower demons. I feel like I'm actually very thoughtful in the shower.
Well, Scholar of Arts, please reach out to us and kind of tell us where you heard about shower demons. But yeah, that's what we got there. So next one from A Little Bit of Beer. How do people do well at their jobs? I'm 36 and have never been good at any job I've had, even if I'm there for years. I mean, I got some thoughts on this. Anybody else want to take the first swing?
I would like to just say one thing. I think that's called imposter syndrome.
Okay.
And I bet like, it's not true that you've never been good at a job, but that is all I wanted to say. And somebody else can jump in.
I think the need to make money is artificial, and it doesn't make sense that, you know, it is genuinely difficult to find work or labor that is financially fulfilling and also, you know, personally pleasing or whatever. You know, and like, it's hard to find something that checks all the boxes and it genuinely. So I think once you accept that fact, then, you know, it allows you to kind of work through that a little bit better.
So,
but is that the same as like being good at the job, though? Because like finding like job satisfaction and like, you know, and then also like being in a position that like is you know, I suppose I forgot to mention that,
but I just said, I just think like being good at a job is also something that's difficult to find.
Right.
So it's
another factor
in the equation. So it makes sense.
But I think to bridge that though, they're kind of related. Like when your job, you feel like it's kind of like there's no fulfillment out of it and you're not like achieving anything, then you're not motivated to like strive at it. So then you don't feel like you're doing good at it. You know, I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, this is a good question. I don't think that, I think most of the jobs that we do are kind of BS. I don't think that anybody is really much better at anything unless it's a very technical skill. That, like, if you really look at some of the jobs that we have today, like, somebody doing it at one job versus another job, like, we're all making things up. I think it's a lot of fake it till you make it kind of thing. And I think the people and the environment you're around will make you feel good or not. I think that also has something to do with it. Like, you might feel like you're not doing your job well, but you could be doing it really well, and the people are not affirming what you're doing and making it feel like you're doing it well. And I think that also has a play into it.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very tough question. And I just feel like some jobs it's just hard to be good at because like it doesn't feel like there's any achievement out of them, or like it just feels like the way it's organized is organized against you in a way where like you have to spend a lot of time doing things that aren't productive just as like company policy. And then I think the deck can be stacked against you sometimes, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think jobs in general is just a really interesting thing because we live in a society where we think we have to have a job, you make money, you like grow, you do whatever. I think a lot of times we kind of get on this track of being like, okay, like I'm going to either measure my self-worth based on what I'm doing. I'm going to measure my status based on this. I'm going to be measuring a lot of things based on how I'm interacting at work. And this is something I've been trying to overcome for a long time of like, that does not actually equate to, am I good or am I bad? I think is a really hard thing for us to like overcome because we're so used to doing good and bad. And like the stuff in between is really, really, it's gray and that's reality.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a little bit of beer. I don't think you're bad at every job you've ever had. And I don't think that, I bet there's jobs out there you could be good at. I've felt like an imposter at jobs before for sure, but I don't know. Keep trying and
try
and find where you fit. he's the best at his job, but he underestimates.
Yeah. I mean, I guess how do we measure what's good? I just don't know. Like it's very artificial.
Right.
I've sat in like performance teams, like where you're evaluating all employees of the company. And those things are arbitrary. They're biased. They're bullshit. I mean, you're ranking people. You could have people that are just as good as each other. And based on how somebody interacted with you on a Tuesday afternoon, you could be lower or higher.
Right.
So like, well, how do we measure being good at a job? That I don't know.
Know the right people. You know the right people. That's what it is.
Yeah, but that
make the right people.
But
like
that
you.
That is so broad though, and that is so, you know, arbitrary and unsatisfying of an answer.
I know, isn't
because
that
it's
sad?
Just like that's there's so much. Someone had mentioned it earlier, but it's like there's so much, you know, knowledge that you just, you know, there's just so much. There's so many different types of knowledges that are necessary to go out in the world and do things. And like, you know, I think it was Lori who was saying that. You know, people don't, there's like so many things that are important that are not really taught at any level or anything. And I think that the problem is that partly is that if they become taught, then they become institutionalized and they become kind of archaic and outdated. And it's just you know, you're never going to be able to take that like social interaction and like the way that like jobs have worked for centuries and just transform it, you know, like it really, really easily or really simply. It's just like a contingent outcome of like all these different processes like leading up to this point in time.
And like, what about, okay, so like taking the other stance, like what if it was true that the user like was not good at any job? Like, is that necessarily like we're making an assumption that that's a bad thing, and maybe the post is written, the question is written as like it's necessarily a bad thing, but like what does that actually mean? I don't think that it is necessarily bad, because if we are conceding that a lot of jobs are just a bunch of BS, like not being good at a BS job is like, what is that actually, what's the value of being good at something like that? It doesn't, as Lori said, it doesn't necessarily make you a good person or a bad person. And like your value as a person is not tied to your output in a job. And so I think that that's a very difficult thing to separate in American culture, is that like our productivity is conflated with our value as people. And so, you know, like one of the, I guess the first thing I started saying was like, you know, like that's, it, this reminds me of imposter syndrome. But like the other side of that is like, it's also okay to not be good at a job, because like that doesn't necessarily need to be that the thing that gives you fulfillment in life, or the thing that makes you have value as a person, because you have value like inherently without that. So that's another way to think of it, I guess.
Yeah, that's
I
a
love
good
coming
that.
to like a bit of
I think also like we do have different types of talents. Like you wouldn't want me you wouldn't want me as a person that's crunching numbers all day. You do not want me as your accountant. It's not a skill that I have honed. It's not a skill that I'm just comes natural to me. I wouldn't be good at that job, but there's other jobs that I might be good at too. So I think there's also, when you find jobs that you're not so good at, I think there's a lot of power in that, because you know, okay, that's kind of a non-negotiable for me. I'm not gonna go into spreadsheet counting all day. Like, I know that's not my path. So there's a lot of power in learning about yourself and in the self-awareness of finding, like, you know, I'm not really good at this.
I could fuck with some spreadsheets.
You can have them.
Right, well, a little bit of beer. I hope your jobs go better in the future, and let us know in the future if you change and you find something that suits you and you feel that you're good at. Next one comes in from Daily Shay. I think I'm saying that right. What are some good movies to watch during a movie date?
Okay, so
Okay.
I have a story to tell about this. Do you know a story I'm gonna tell?
Oh, yes. This is about me. I was here for this, but
You
I was
were
unaware at the time.
okay. Wait, so let's finish the question. The question,
Oh,
I'll
sorry.
read. Yeah,
You
go
go ahead.
ahead. I'll
Go
go ahead. Go
He
ahead.
usually lets me choose, but I'm super indecisive because I'm afraid of choosing some too boring, too sad, etc. I'm open to any genre really, as long as it's entertaining, except horror. And yes, we actually watch the movie, LOL. Yeah, I didn't think about this before. I actually picked this question out, and I did not, but now I know exactly what story Jessica is about to tell, and I was unaware of it at the time.
So when I first started to date Colton, he was like, let me show you one of my favorite movies. And so for me, I tend to, I'll just preface this by saying, like, I tend to like maybe overthink things, and I'm like, what's the hidden meaning? And so he shows me, he's like, yeah, I really like this movie. It's 50 or 500 Days of Summer, right? Is that the name? Yeah.
Correct, that's the
Anyways, it's a
name.
classic, like, manic pixie dream girl role of, it was like, who,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel.
yeah, she's like quintessential like manic pixie dream girl in this movie. Anyways, so in the movie, if you have, anybody has seen this, you know, she's kind of flaky, and like she's, it's just like not a good relationship. It's just like it kind of like is a train wreck for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's
Yeah, I don't remember his name in the
character.
movie.
Anyway, so I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, why is he showing me this movie about a train wreck of a relationship? Like, does he think I'm a flake like this? Like, what's he trying to say about, like, what's going on? Like, why? And also, why is this one of his favorite movies? So, like, I just kind of was like, what's the hidden meaning in here? So, like, maybe you don't have to overthink it like that, but, like, don't pick that movie.
Well, why I thought it was a good movie, at least let me defend myself a little bit here. I love the way it, like, shows a relationship at the beginning as this beautiful thing. There's, like, this image of Zooey Deschanel in a bed and Joseph Gordon-Levitt saying all nice things about her. And then they do that same cut later in the movie, literally the exact same video of Zooey Deschanel, and he says all these mean things about her. Okay, it's the same video. Then there's my other part that I want to talk about, the cinematography, I guess, is where it goes a scene where he's going to a dinner party after they've, like, broken up, I think. And it splits into two screens, and one is like how he thinks it's going to go, and the other is the actual. It's kind of like a meme in action before they were a big thing. And it obviously the way he thinks it's going to go is beautiful. He talks to Zooey Deschanel and everything's wonderful and they're going to, you know, get together again. And then the actual is nothing like that at all. And it's terrible. But yeah, anyways.
Objectively I think it is a good movie, but like, I guess, so maybe that wasn't a good pick for like a beginning of the relationship thing. So maybe the advice that I would give is it depends on where you are in your relationship. It depends on each other's taste. And like, I had something else. But yeah, like if you're just, you might want to have a theme too. So like if you're just trying to pick out like good movies
Nicolas
to watch.
Cage movies?
Oh yeah, like the top 10 Nicolas Cage movies.
That was
like
a joke. You're not, that's, don't.
And why they're not National Treasure.
No.
But you could try that. But like, anyways, long story short, me and Colton got married, so it's fine. Didn't make much of a difference. But it is something that I thought about. I was just like, what is he saying with this?
I didn't think
choice?
About it at all. I was just like, this is a good movie. We should watch it. And it was. Lori, do you have any recommendations for date movies?
Honestly, I do not. I'm like trying to think. I mean, guess it depends on the person too. Like,
there's two ways to go, right? Either you're watching rom-coms, or you're not watching rom-coms. Those are the two categories. Like, if you're not watching rom-coms, then okay. If you're watching rom-coms, anything with Ryan Reynolds. All right.
The Oscars would have been a lot easier if it was just rom-coms versus not rom-coms.
Is there a rom-com category?
I don't know.
I wish there was. That'd
There's
be awesome.
There's a comedy category, which a rom-com would come into, I believe.
How many Oscars would Julia Roberts have from that category? You guys ever see Mystic Pizza?
What?
I just recently watched that, actually. I mean, I think it depends on the person, and I think it also depends on, like, why you pick it. And I think if you're picking this with a person that is your significant other, or you're going on a date, like, maybe this is an opportunity to explain why and communicate things. Like, maybe Jessica, you and Colton should have talked about, oh, I'm just picking this because it's one of my favorite movies. Not like,
oh,
because of whatever, you know,
I was young.
No, we actually did talk about it. I like brought it up like sometime after that. I was like, what were you trying to say? And he was like, oh, no, that wasn't it at all. I was like, oh, classic.
That was years later, mind you.
I feel like there is like that.
Yeah, I feel like you did not bring it up. This was like years later. You're like, remember when you showed me this movie? And I was like, what?
I do think, though, like that is like you should have an open, trusting conversation around like, wow, that movie was shit. Or like that movie was amazing. And like be able to share your truest opinions on that movie. So it doesn't really matter what you're watching as long as you're able to like talk about it and like, I don't know, dissect it. But I might be saying that and Josh is like rolling his eyes because we're also married and we've watched a lot of movies together. Josh has a rule though.
What's the rule?
Josh has a rule whenever I start a movie that he can leave the room at any point. So if he doesn't like the movie, he'll just get up and go. I don't know. Josh, do you want to share?
I think the best movie to watch during a movie date is the movie that's playing at the local theater. That's my final word on that.
I feel like I want to give a good movie recommendation. Baby Driver.
Oh, that was pretty pretty good.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Sort of like, if that's not too rom-com-y, but like I'm feeling like not quite rom-com. Ooh, Groundhog Day.
Well, I guess this Groundhog is a good Day. Question.
That's a good one.
Oh, go for it, Lori.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Actually, another really good one that's really slept on is Baby's Day Out.
What's that?
Baby's Day Out is a great movie. You guys remember that movie about the baby that had the three dads?
What? No,
is this like a 90s? Like, this is like a 90s movie, right?
What's that movie called? It's like,
It's
like
Baby.
It's like three dads and a baby or something.
Yeah, we three watched it on a date.
Dude. Okay, right, but like, hold on. So three dads and a baby. It's all about this Tom Selleck.
You're not
being for real. This is real.
This is real.
Three dads and a baby is a listen to this. Is a 1987 American comedy film directed by Leonard Nimoy. Also Spock. Oh, okay, it stars Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, and Ted Danson. As three bachelors, as they attempt to adapt their lives to de facto fatherhood, with the arrival of the love child of one of the gentlemen, and so it's you know,
this is like Jerry Springer,
but it's like a really fun, like light movie, and it's cute, and it has this cute baby in it, and then they made a movie after that, which I believe was like.
You are not
set
the father.
In the same universe, which is Baby's Day Out. And it's basically this little baby, I believe it's Tom Selleck's baby, gets out and ends up basically crawling all over the entire city and ends up on like construction cranes and like everything.
It's bad, but it's like good bad.
I
so
gotcha.
Did this just change from a movie you think is worth watching versus
no?
A
this
no,
is a
Josh.
Movie? Like, so
Josh had us watch it on a date.
It was like one of the first movies we watched. I was like, "This movie slept on. Like, you gotta watch this movie. It's actually pretty good." But like, it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's good because it's like bad, but it's like a good bad. Sorry, said that already.
A good.
Yeah,
bad.
Yeah. So like, you're kind of like describing sort of like a category of like films, right? So like older kind of like lighthearted films that like maybe aren't like critically acclaimed but like entertaining. So like kind of keeping it light, kind of like
adding
keeping
to my
it
list,
happy.
Super bad.
I have a question for the group. Is it you watch this movie repeatedly, like you've seen this movie before, or like for me, a good movie on a date is when you both haven't seen it. And so
yeah,
when you bring in
a movie sure.
that you really have a lot of attachment to into the date and your date doesn't like it, they overanalyze it, those types of things, then you get in a pickle. But when you both haven't seen it, then you're on an equal playing field. And until you get a little bit more into your relationship, then you can like watch the movies that you watch repeatedly, you know, but that I think is really important is like finding new movies that you both haven't seen. And so a lot of them in theaters, like what's coming out on the next streaming service. I think those are good date night ones.
I think that you're totally right. Yeah. Cause then like the scenario that like you were like bringing kind of like a loaded movie choice into like a relationship can cause like, you know, some tension or whatever. It's sort of like in the similar way of like if you find out somebody's like favorite band is like the worst music you've ever heard, you know, like you can be judgmental about that. So like it's just like I think that like it's kind of along the lines of like, where's your level of intimacy and like your stage in the relationship? And like, just like you said, Lori, like new movies to everybody, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of pressure otherwise.
I agree.
And everybody comes to the table with different interests in movies they've already seen. So it's tough because it's like, just like the story that you described, Jessica, wherein Colton had you watch this movie, but it just didn't really, it struck you as kind of weird. Like you didn't quite get why. And it's because I can see how it's like a very, the way Colton explained it, like he likes the movie for such specific reasons.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like so specific to his taste that you kind of have to understand him to really like the movie in that way. And it's a different movie experience too than just watching a movie on your own and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So I guess think about the movie that you're going to show and think about, yeah, because.
But I will, I still will say like Baby's Day Out is a great movie. Like and it's just because it's so light. Like if you're going to go with like, if there's nothing playing at your local theater or there is no local theater, then you should go. Then, you know, I would recommend Baby's Day Out. If you can't get Baby's Day Out, I would say a good backup would probably be something like A Battery's Not Included.
Oh, that's such a great 80s movie. That's like late 80s, isn't it? Or like 90s. Yes. Yeah, so like 80s, 90s movies. Have you guys ever seen Labyrinth or like the old like Jim Henson movies? Like, I feel like those are just like really fun, timeless, joyous movies.
I don't remember many of the movies I've watched.
Lori, I don't think you've given us a single movie, Lori.
I haven't.
It's okay.
But you know why? Because I don't tend to rewatch a lot of movies.
Oh, me either. But what about the good ones? You don't remember?
I'm just trying to even remember.
I'd like to add Interstellar to my list.
Oh yeah, Interstellar.
Great one.
Yeah, great movie.
No, I mean for a first date.
Wait, is this a first date? Oh, is this a first date?
I don't think it is. Okay, so
they've watched movies together before.
Yeah. It's just a movie date. Oh, okay,
I think Interstellar is
a great movie.
Inception, if you haven't seen that.
Cried like a baby.
I don't know. I'll give you that one. I do not recommend Interstellar for people to watch on a date. I would not.
All right. Well, agree to disagree because I recommend Interstellar.
Yeah, I'm going to. Okay, you need a movie from me. I'm saying Miss Congeniality. Always a classic.
I'm going to downvote that.
Ouch.
I genuinely don't know what I would say. I like a lot of TV shows. Maybe Josh would tell
you
what I would have.
Mystic Pizza?
Mystic Pizza is kind of weird.
All right. Yeah, don't watch Mystic Pizza.
Movie.
Don't watch that.
That is not a good date movie. I can tell you what aren't good date movies. That one is not good.
All right. I take that back. All right.
What was that other one? So, Colton, you said you were talking about 500 Days of Summer. What about 50 First Dates?
I
don't think I've ever seen it either.
It's Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore.
I haven't seen it.
I have definitely seen that.
Let me tell you, they are a magnetic combo together. So, Sandman getting in there. It really is something that everybody, I think, at the time wanted to see. And we were definitely not disappointed.
All right, then. Well,
okay, I have movies now.
Okay.
Any Pixar movie I could get down with.
For a
Toy Story would be good.
Okay.
Yeah, for a date. No. Coco, awesome. Luca, love. Any kind of Pixar movie. They pull on all your heartstrings and also make you laugh. I think those are good movies.
Maybe
to watch
I'm just
together.
Like a cynical asshole, but if I was watching a Pixar movie on a date, I'd be like, again, maybe I'm just not the right person to answer this question because, like, no movie is going to be the right movie.
You're overanalyzing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I'd be like,
Daily Shay, we've given you some movies at least. Please let us know if you watched any of them or what movie you chose.
Let us know if you watch Baby's Day Out. That's really
cool. I'm going to watch that one. So, Daily Shay, I want you to watch Baby's Day Out with your significant other that you're watching movies with.
Okay, but like, I think we did settle on some guidelines. So,
yeah.
New movies
are
to both
good.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you like have a movie you want to share, like as like something that's like something you love that is like an intimate.
Yeah, be careful with that.
I mean, like, yeah, just like.
I'm gonna sit on Groundhog Day as my best. My best recommendation.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
It's cute. That's good.
Classic. Okay.
All right. From Jiang Cool 9. People that live alone. Do you close your bathroom door? I'm going to expand this to all people. Do you close your bathroom door? For me, if I'm peeing at home and like I don't have guests over, I'm not closing the bathroom door ever.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, also our cat. So we have cats. No,
you can't.
So
close
if you
the
close
door.
A door in our house, like the cat just like can't. It's not allowed. So like she'll scratch at the door like incessantly. No. So like there's no doors closed allowed.
She doesn't want to come in. She just wants the door.
Yeah,
to be
the
open.
Door can't be open. She'll just like you'll open the door after she scratches on it, and she'll just like sit there and or walk away. As long as it's open, everything's cool, but no doors should be closed. Ever.
I feel like I close the bathroom door a lot, and I feel like it. I think that if you want to close the bathroom door, it's fine, and I don't really know why anybody was getting all upset about people closing the bathroom
door. I don't think anyone's getting upset.
No, the only one that's upset about closed doors is my cat.
Well, I think that it's fine to close the bathroom door even when you live alone, especially when you live alone.
But would you do it or not?
Yeah, I feel like when I lived alone, I didn't close it at all.
Me, it's probably a 50-50 ratio for me. I, you know, sometimes
depends on
I do,
how you're
sometimes
feeling.
I don't. Yeah, you know.
I do not shut the bathroom door. And after being in COVID lockdown, when I go to people's houses, I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta shut the door. I had to like relearn that.
Yeah.
It just takes so much effort. Again, I think I'm just lazy. That's all I'm learning about myself in this whole process.
I appreciate that. It's like strategic laziness though. So it's good.
I haven't really lived by myself.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So, but I'm pretty sure if I keep the door open with other people, I feel like I would keep the door open with myself.
I will point out on Reddit, there is quite a bit of posts of people talking about how their cats wouldn't allow such a thing.
Oh, really? That's so interesting.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of responses to this one.
That's cool. Hot topics, open doors.
All right. All right, our next question comes in from John Hampton 52. And the question is, who is Master Chief and why is he so strong? And Lori, I wanted to direct this question to you first. Do you know who Master Chief is or why he's so strong?
I feel like you're talking about Master Chef, which is a great show. But I have no idea who Master Chief is. And I don't,
you don't know who Master Chief is at all?
No. Why would I know who that is? Am I supposed to know who that is?
No, probably not. Josh, would you like to...
I think that Master Chief is the guy that you fight with in Halo.
Okay.
And he's so strong because it's a video game.
Okay. All right. Jessica?
Well, Master Chief is the best Marine the universe has ever seen. He's so strong because he is the best Marine in the whole galaxy. He has a very shiny helmet, which is essentially just like the pair of sunglasses that like Guy Fieri wears, but like in a helmet form. And he has like shiny armor. That's really helpful. Also, doesn't he have like Cortana? But
yes, he does have Cortana.
Cortana even helpful though? Probably not there either.
No, Cortana's super helpful.
To Master Chief?
Yes.
I don't believe it.
Okay, well.
Anyways, but he is for sure the best Marine that the universe has ever seen. And that's the only thing I know about him.
I'm sure Reddit answered this question. I didn't look extensively at their answers, but Master Chief is... You're correct. He is the best Spartan, and he is from Halo.
I said Marine, not Marine. Spartan.
Oh, well, okay. So he's for a part of the UNSC, which is they're like Space Marines, basically. Anyways, so he's from Halo, originally released in 2001, I want to say, on the Xbox. It was the killer app for the Xbox when it first came out and really helped put the Xbox on the map, and then proceeded into multiple other Halo games. And Master Chief kind of became the mascot for Microsoft's Xbox. And I would say was very much responsible for the success of the Xbox and somewhat the Xbox 360. And why is he so strong? Because he's genetically modified. And there's a new show on Paramount with that's Halo, and I think it goes a little bit into that. There's only two episodes out, but it cuts back to his childhood. So he's John 117, I think it is, and he was like taken as a child, and they genetically modify him to become like a super soldier, and that's kind of what all the Spartans are. There's other Spartans. It's not just Master Chief.
Is Master Chief just one guy forever?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Master
Chief. He's not just like repeated Johns, like John 217.
No, they're 1, not clones. But Master Chief is, so I guess with Halo, like they wanted to name him something that was an actual position in some form of the military. I don't know which one, but I think it was Marines. Anyways,
Marine Corps, right? They're like space Marines, right?
Well, they are, but no, Master Chief is an actual rank in the military.
Oh, right.
And Master Chief is the highest rank that also goes to the battlefield. So that's how they came up with Master Chief. It's the highest rank that still goes to the battlefield, and it's Master Chief. And that's where that name comes from. But, I mean, I like Halo, and I like Master Chief, but that's why he's strong, and he's also cool.
Is he also a non-player character?
No, Master Chief is pretty much who you play in most of the Halo games.
Okay.
All I can say is it's Gordon Ramsay, final answer, and he's strong because he has a really good knife set. That's Master Chef.
Oh, Master Chef.
Wait, is it always?
I should know this Gordon answer. Ramsay,
is Gordon Ramsay the Master Chef?
Gordon Wait, Ramsay.
We're not talking about.
Gordon Ramsay stars in a show called Master Chef, and they find the Master Chef out of that season.
But I see.
Y'all are talking about Master Chief, and I don't know anything about them.
Yeah. John Hampton, 52. You should play some Halo. It's a fun game. But I'm sure you've already figured out who Master Chief is. Next question from Hunting for Dom Female. Does anyone else eat KFC, regret it every time, forget, eat it again, and repeat? And I'm not specifically talking about KFC here, but I mean, who doesn't have things they do or restaurant or like foods they eat, regret, forget, eat again, and repeat? I mean, do you guys have any common ones here that plague you?
Yeah, I mean, basically any fried chicken.
So KFC would apply for you.
What about Taco Bell?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but basically fast food, fried chicken. And okay. I definitely do just eat it, but I guess I don't regret it as much.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's an element of joy that it brings me, so little regret.
I agree.
But my physical regret, yes. Mental regret, not as much.
Yeah, because we ate Chick-fil-A today and it was amazing. And I have no regrets at all. It was the best chicken sandwich ever.
Not the best. It was good for a fast food chicken sandwich.
Extremely satisfying. I would categorize that as one of the best. But anyways.
Yeah, it's good.
So, but KFC, I can't remember the last time I ate at KFC. I think the best thing that they have is corn and mashed potatoes mixed together. What is that called?
Yeah, probably. Corn and mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called.
Those like bowls.
Oh, good
maybe?
To know. Cool.
KFC is something that I didn't really eat a lot when I was growing up. And every now and again, I'll be like, oh, I wonder how KFC is. And every time I do buy it, I'm like, it's really not as good as you would think. So maybe that's the regret.
They have like a lot of coleslaw and it's just an abomination. Like it's the worst coleslaw you can ever imagine getting. And it's just like,
okay, well,
please,
we're trashing KFC.
We are.
The question was more like, what kind of things do you do regret, forget, and then do again?
I mean, no, but they specifically say
KFC.
KFC.
But I don't, I mean, yeah, but that's because Hunting for Dom Female enjoys KFC, and that's fine. But I guess for me, there's other things, but not KFC.
Colton, does it mean like after does it say, I can't remember in the question, like after you eat it? Does he actually eat it or does he feel regret
I'll repeat it
when he gets it? I'll
repeat it for you. Does anyone else eat KFC, regret it every time, forget, eat it again, and repeat?
Yeah, I definitely have lots of restaurants that I do that to. Little Caesars. I love Little Caesars. But
What?
sometimes I will regret it and then I'll get it again. I do love Little Caesars.
Yeah.
We're going back into the Little Caesars, but trying to think of what
Pizza,
I eat a
pizza.
lot.
The worst, I think, is if this happens and you forgot that it was disappointing. So if it's like not KFC, but it's like a restaurant that's supposed to be like good and like you go there again, and you're like, oh wait, this was a huge disappointment. That's always super sad.
100% for me, it's White Castle. Like, that's the one. Like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, White Castle. And then I was
Think you
like,
ironically say
oh,
that though.
I do, but in secretly, I
I mean,
want
we
it
had White Castle
all the
after
time.
Thanksgiving one time and it was
It
amazing. That
was
was pretty good,
always
so.
amazing. We should go right now.
Yeah, we gotta cut this short.
They're probably open. We gotta go, guys. We gotta go to
I'm
White
down
Castle.
for I'm down for White Castle.
It's a disappointment every time though, because we have to wait like 50 minutes in line for a
Yeah, our White Castle's slow. Shout us out. Is your White Castle slow? I'm just curious because like there's not a lot of them where we are in the Midwest, and like the only one I've ever been to is slow all the time. Like, are other White Castles fast? Can you like get through a White Castle in like
less
15
than an
minutes?
hour.
Yeah, we've had to wait so long.
Also, they have like little waffle sliders.
Oh, that's the best. They're
I know, like
breakfast sandwiches.
how could you regret
Yeah, that
that?
was the best thing I've had
Anyways.
from White Castle, is breakfast sandwiches.
Okay, anyways, KFC doesn't have that, so no
Yeah,
regret.
I guess I wasn't here to, you know, I'm sorry, KFC. I didn't mean to take that out on you. Yeah, but definitely I have foods or restaurants where I eat them and then I'm like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that, but then I do it again. And it's good at the time, right? I mean, that's what it is. It's like
Sometimes
enjoyable at
it's
the
not,
time.
though.
Well,
Sometimes it's
you're
just a
doing it anyways. So
Sometimes it's just a
you're just
disappointment from
sad
the
while you're eating
beginning.
your fried chicken.
If it's bad fried chicken, yeah, because like
Yeah.
that is a disappointment, yeah.
I mean, bad fried chicken would be a real disappointment
I
because it's like
know.
fried and terrible for you, and you're
I
like, oh, this
know.
doesn't even taste good.
I know.
You
Yeah.
know, one
You know what I'm
other
talking about.
restaurant I think I've had this happen to me is Chipotle. I get
Really?
really excited about Chipotle, and I don't know if it's just recently, but I feel like a couple times I've gotten really salty Chipotle, and then I
Ooh,
kind of forget
true.
about
Okay.
it. And I'm like, oh no, that was just a one-off. And then I get it again, and I'm like, no, this is really freaking salty. And
Is this all the same Chipotle?
no, Lori's right. That happens to me too, and we live in different cities, so
But does that happen at the same Chipotle that you go to, Lori? Is this like the same Chipotle
I
you're
don't
going
think
to
it's
each time
always
this
the
happens?
same, no. I think it's pretty
Okay.
consistent. I think it's like
Because
I put a picture of it in my head and I remember it differently than when I actually eat it. And there is an element of like, it's not as good as I remember it.
I
It's not to
gotcha.
say that it's
So,
bad, it's just it's not as good as I remember it every time.
what I've found with the burrito places in general is like it's highly dependent upon which specific one you're at. Like, there's like certain Chipotles that seem to be really good and other ones not as good. Like, so with the other burrito restaurants too, it's like if you find one that's good, because like there's one near me that's like not good, and but there's another one further away of the same one, and that one's good.
Maybe I need
And
to
kind of go
shop
there independent?
around.
Maybe.
Who has time for that?
True.
I don't have time for salty ass
Well,
rice.
I guess the whole point of the thing of going to franchise is you're expecting like the same thing everywhere you go. That's kind of how they sell themselves. So I guess you're right.
It
Like, who
should
has
be
time for that? Because that's the
consistent.
whole point of them. Yeah. No, you're right. It should be.
But there are a lot of those places where I like, in my head, I just like have a better picture of it than reality.
Sure.
Can't think of other ones.
I'm just imagining you like, or maybe I'm imagining me like eating a piece of sad fried chicken and just like a single
Sad
tear.
fried chicken.
the most disappointing fried chicken of your
Yeah,
whole life.
leftover chicken that you put in the microwave because you didn't have
It,
time to put it in the oven.
yeah, it brings a tear to your eye, you know, because it's such a disappointment.
Right. Well, so hunting for Dom female. We agree with you, just not on KFC. All right. And our next question. So, sometimes on Reddit, a question will get no responses. So this next question has no responses as of the time that we're recording this. And today, we're going to take it on ourselves to answer this one, be the first response here. This one was submitted by Throwaway 2817291. And the question is, how long should one wait before moving on after someone they've been seeing stop texting back? What amount of time constitutes ghosting? So the main question here that I want to get at the core of is, what amount of time constitutes as ghosting? And now we don't really have a lot of context, but how long before it's ghosting?
I'm going to say like a week.
Okay. That's not a bad estimate. I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess if somebody hasn't texted you back in a week, it's hard because, like, how long have you been seeing them, right? Like that.
If it's like a new thing, yeah, and it's been like a week, yeah, I think that it's like safe to say that it's like,
right.
I mean, people get busy. So like the reason I say at least a week, because mm-hmm, like over a couple of days, like you can be busy, right? Yeah. And you don't need to like, sure, hear from a person like every single day.
Sure.
But like if it's been like a week or more, like I think that that is a clear sign that they're probably just not into you that much. So like,
yeah,
I would say that would be the cutoff for me. Mm-hmm.
What if they respond like 3 weeks from now after
I would assume
up on
that
it?
They got ghosted by somebody else and were like, kind of like, you know, they're coming back, you know?
Yeah.
Ghosted so, by the ghoster and then the, that's a,
yeah,
that's
like, or like
a
it didn't work out.
Circle.
So if they came back a month later,
you're not option number one. Yeah. You probably don't need that anyways.
Yeah, that's
it's just like common courtesy anyways.
Right.
I'm a pretty bad texter. Like,
yeah,
I like if somebody texts me, I might wait 2 weeks and then respond to your question. However, that's like friends. So yeah, if I'm assuming they're talking about ghosting in the term of
relationships,
right?
Sense. Yeah.
And
for sure.
So
yeah.
I think that if they haven't really texted you back in a pretty regular cadence of like pretty quickly, mm-hmm, after, then they're not interested unless something's really going down. And that, I think, like, something happens, they have one excuse, but you only get one excuse. I don't think, mm-hmm, you get multiple excuses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Like, if something, like, catastrophic happened to them and you hear in a couple weeks and, like, then maybe. But
maybe it doesn't have to be, like, the most catastrophic,
right,
thing,
like,
that you can imagine.
Some
but,
reason
like,
that,
you know.
Yeah. I guess, I think you're completely right. Like, and it's sometimes it's hard to, like, sometimes it's hard to take that. Like, if it's somebody you're really interested in, I think it's very hard to take that at getting ghosted, and you're like, you're kind of holding on to that hope. And I get that, but I would agree. Like, if it's been like, I don't know. Sure, say a week, but like, if they're just not responding to you, then it's probably not gonna work.
A week kind of feels long to me.
It sucks.
I feel like they haven't really responded in a couple days. That means to me that they don't even feel comfortable telling me what's going on, of why they can't,
right,
really chat much or things like that. But I bet I could see, right, Jessica being like, okay, a week, it's officially ghosting. Like, I could,
yeah,
see,
yeah,
being
like the point of no return.
Okay, we're not yeah, coming back from this kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you're
exactly
at a week, it's probably like, yeah, yeah, for sure. That
and like
sense.
A couple of days, you might be like, right?
Yeah.
Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, there's not going to be, like, one set answer necessarily for everybody. I think that you should take as much time as you need or don't need in order to move on. And I think, you know, I think that's also, like, that's part of the question there, too.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how
oh,
much,
yeah, I guess
how, you know?
The first part, yeah.
Yeah. But,
yep.
I mean, I would,
go ahead, sorry,
I would
Josh,
just echo what you guys said. I also think that, like, a week is probably like fair, at least to send a text to say like, you know, hey, what's up or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And I guess if you look at the first part, how long should one wait before moving on? Like,
right. That's kind of a little different.
Yeah. And like, I guess that really, like, I wish we knew how long they had been seeing each other or gave us some more context to their relationship. Because if it's somebody, mm-hmm, you like have been on like 1-2 dates with and they've not talked to you for a week, I mean, that's probably okay at that point. But like,
move
have you
on,
been seeing,
yeah,
this person for months? Then that's, I yeah, mean, that's a little more hurtful, I guess, but like,
yeah,
I don't know what, yeah. So I'd be really curious to know the further extent of the situation.
That's super interesting, Colton, because like it's you're basically saying based on the amount of time I'm with the person equals a different amount of time of what ghosting equals. That, like, so if I am like just I feel like if I was just starting to talk to somebody and like we have some good rapport and then they didn't really respond to me, I feel like I would give up a lot faster than if it was somebody that I had been with for a while.
For sure.
I would not let go as fast. So I feel like it's
Yeah.
kind of an interesting way of looking at time in relative to what ghosting really means.
Well, and I also think if you had been like seeing that person for like, you know, say a few months, like it's a totally different feeling then. You're like, wait, why did this, you know, whereas if it's somebody you went on like two dates with, then, you know, you could see, but like when they just, yeah, ghosting, that's.
And it depends on if you guys watched a bad movie together.
Yeah,
So like,
did you
you
show
know.
somebody a 500 Days of Summer and they took the hint?
We can't recommend 500 Days of Summer.
Well, we can re watch it in your developed relationship or by yourself.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So I guess really I think the final thing is throwaway 2817291. If you haven't deleted this throwaway account yet and you receive my message, would you please kind of tell us the situation? Like we're interested and we could give some more advice, but we need some more details. Like, come on.
Without and then without those details, I'm gonna stick with mine. You know, like the point of no return is 1 week.
Yeah. I'm not gonna disagree with that.
I think that's pretty legit.
Yeah.
The
All right.
point of
Well.
no return.
All right then. Well, that's all for our questions today. Send us your thoughts or questions to our email, no stupid answers podcast at gmail.com. Subscribe to us wherever you hear podcasts. We're gonna try to do this bi-weekly. We'd love to get your feedback or hear if there's anybody out there listening. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Bye, all.